man. This aircon is racist.
I've never ever been a spy.
Can the VBS bank loot?
The problem is that Pinky.
I'll never subject myself to whiteness.
I'm listening.
Can you have consistency, Honorable Chair?
Corruption was an Olympic sport. They will always win gold.
This is not a shit.
Sergeant at arms, can you please come
on the
in?
Point of order.
Good day and welcome to another edition of Sunday Times Politics Weekly with me, Amil Amrao. I'm in the studio today with my politics comrades, Cornita Hunter, Apiwa de Klerk, and Zimasa Matewonia. Guys, thank you so much for joining me this week. We're going to jump straight into it because we're constrained on time. What we're going to talk about later in our election coverage is the health issue in South Africa. The NHI is going to be under debate, so we're going to have a very heated debate like we did last week about land, I'm sure. I'm sure everybody has some very big views and some very controversial views about the NHI. I see Juanita smiling. She's getting ready to get into it. But first, let's talk about our front page at in the Sunday Times this past weekend. Ace's murky dealings. So this story deals mostly with a book called Gangster State, written by Peter Louis Myburg. And it's basically a massive investigation into state capture in the Free State, where Ace Magashule was premier before he was elected as Secretary General of the ANC. Guys, what's your take on the story? Because we've seen a lot of Ace's dealings in the province. If I'm not mistaken, Juanita, he was the longest serving premier in the country's history in the Free State. And there's been so many allegations around Ace, and the ANC statement after the article was quite telling, basically attacking news outlets, calling it fake news, calling it propaganda, a lot of what the EFF does essentially, and their wording. So what do we think about the story, guys?
So Ace Magashule has been one of the longest serving ANC chairpersons, provincial ANC chairpersons. He served in that position for 20 years. I remember in 2017, I went to speak to him and he couldn't remember how long he was serving as ANC chairperson, right? And he obviously was kingmaker in the ANC in that province, and also whoever was premier served at his behest, and then he became premier, and then he was obviously a kingmaker in the ANC somewhat. So there was always these like suspicions about him and his beginnings in the ANC, and then later on into these sort of corrupt dealings. And in state capture, especially the emails, it kind of painted a picture of how you know, he worked and how he operated. And the Estina Dairy Farm debacle blew the lid on the modus operandi of how he worked and how he got people involved. And since then, obviously, there's been this great intrigue about his role in state capture. And so I think Peter Louis Myburg's book is quite fascinating. I just bought it and I've started reading it. But the articles in the Sunday Times and other media organizations really go to the heart of what it was. Basically, it's rampant looting, corruption, kickbacks, some murky gangsterism stuff.
They don't have shame, eh?
No. And yes. And that's and the basically the how emboldened he was in all of these things.
How blatant it all was as well. Because he did this thinking that he had absolute power and nothing could ever happen to him, and nothing ever did, Apiwe.
Ish, the sad part is when you go to the part about them arriving at the Gupta compound, and one of the brothers allegedly boasting about how they can call any minister and about how they have files on them and so on. It's sad how such a person would then be elevated to such an important position in the ANC. He's threatening to take legal action, like many politicians always do. Let's hope
he does.
Because
it only helps journalism if he does.
Yeah, if he does. Let's see if he will stick to his word. But I mean, when you have someone who was your ally sort of coming out and speaking out,
Manyoni.
Yeah, it sort of assists us as the public, because we can say there's someone who's a witness. So the state institution should act. I mean, there is a person speaking. And I mean, Free State is the only province where we're sort of getting in to the issue of state capture, even with the Estina issue, right? Because the other provinces we haven't had.
Northwest
with Supra's administration, but it's just been that Free State seems that there was a little bit more.
It's almost like Free State was ground zero for state capture in many ways, with the Frieda Dairy Farm, and lots of that was came out at the state capture inquiry.
But now we see so much more.
So much
now
more, and it looks like it went back even before the Gupta's were a thing in South Africa. This rampant
escalated
corruption
the numbers,
and yes, of course, it seems like Ace's control of the Free State and everything that happened under him was there from the outset, and this book sort of proves that, doesn't it? But let's look at it.
Shows you the danger of having someone being in charge for that long.
Simos, I want to ask you about the politics behind this, though. And Cornita, if you want to jump in here as well, any of you guys. You've got now an ANC Secretary General facing massive allegations of state capture, fraud, corruption, well, anything under the book, actually. How does a party or a president deal with this? Just because of the amount of power Ace has from the Free State and within the ANC now, and the faction that he belongs to as well, where does the ANC or the president start in dealing with this? Do they even deal with it at all?
I think the ANC has already showed us how they aim to deal with any allegations of corruption against their leaders with the statement that they released on Sunday, basically rubbishing everything that is contained in the book. I'm not even sure if they've read the book. But you know what? I think what we must try to avoid is to look at the statement as a voice of a certain faction supporting Ace. It's a statement from the whole ANC.
Because keep giving them the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, we keep giving them this leeway that no, it's the Zuma faction, it's not the Ramaphosa faction, But what is the Ramaphosa faction doing about all of this, you know? So yeah, I don't know. You know, Tumamina, we've come to know him as the guy who lets processes deal with you. So maybe he will let the legal processes deal with Tumamina. I don't know when or how, but... Yeah.
So you remember last year there was the Hawks did raid his offices, right? But obviously we know, we must just say, whenever we talk about the criminal justice system, that it's lumping up or legless, actually. But for me, Zimasa, is that these allegations or these accusations made against Ace Mahashule is not something that is taken from somewhere in the air. Thabo Manyoni is a respected ANC politician. He served in parliament. He served the ANC in parliament. And he's saying, I went, Mahashule took me to the Gupta home, etc., etc. So
and they
what?
They gave him an envelope.
He's saying this. It's not through third parties. It's not through any of this.
Yeah.
And so the thing is, for me, Ace Mahashule knew that this book was coming out. He could have then disproved the story. Why not disprove it? Why not say, if you want to go post the fact and take it to court, that will be brilliant for us as journalists. And that's something politicians don't realize, is that it serves better in our interest to take the story to court, let it get to court, and then you can ventilate the story.
But history tells us that it serves better for Ace politically to rubbish the story in public and then do nothing
about it.
Because once there is a politician who is deemed powerful but who is has some enemies, imaginary or real enemies, once there is a story about corruption that comes out against them, there is always this uproar that, you know, white monopoly capital media attacking our leaders, we shall not be deterred, and all that nonsense. Mostly also from people who haven't even bothered to read the book. So Ace knows that he has the protection that Zuma also had throughout his whole
9 years of shenanigans. So he's just going to chill.
Mm. But that's two peas in a pod, the two of them, Zuma and Magashule. They operated the same way. You use political power to amass wealth, and you use the wealth you amass to further steal political power. And that is a sort of symbiotic relationship between money and power with these individuals. And that's why they can stay in power, have that absolute rule. And then also, when you are implicated in serious wrongdoing, which possibly may or may not include the death of people, you then rubbish it as fictitious without even attempting. And that's the thing about Zuma and the State Capture Commission. I've counted the other day, he's accused, as it stands in the State Capture Commission, of more than 12 actual crimes. Like, if you have to use, you know, the law and you say this is a crime, yet in his mind, no, this is all politics that's happening. Yeah. You know, this is all... And so this the same thing with Ace Magashule, and I think it'll be very interesting to see how the commission deals with it, because the people that are going to, and for the lack of a better word, sink him, are people who served alongside it. These are not opposition party members. These are not, you know, sources that are in dubious places. These Thabo Manyoni, Mxolisi Tukwana, all of these kind of people, these are people who were his allies.
Coming back to the ANC, what you were saying, and I think it's very important. I saw an NEC member tweeting about after the statement. Derek, saying that this thing was never discussed by the ANC, NEC, and whatnot, sort of distancing himself from the statement. But what action do you take then? If you feel that the spokesperson of the ANC is issued a statement that is unsanctioned by the party, or rather the party would rather want to distance themselves from this, then bring a motion or something.
But also, why didn't you discuss this matter in the NEC? I mean, say we can't be discussing books.
What age are they living in?
Guys, I think it's time for us to move on. Let's move on to our election coverage for this week. We're going to be talking about the dire health situation in South Africa. And I think the Life Esedimeni tragedy and disaster that was aside as a spotlight on our health issues in the country. Let's look at a few stats here. Between 2002 and 2010, there were 11,700 medical school graduates, while the government created only 4,400 posts for these people. That's one aspect of our health crisis, that we do not have enough specialists and doctors in our public sector. Secondly, currently available statistics show that the public sector, there's just over 16% of facilities complying with norms and standards. So that just shows the state of the infrastructure we have in our health sector. And then obviously the big question of the NHI. Government's proposing several possibilities on how to raise 375 billion rand needed by 2025 to get the NHI off the ground. And they want to do this by seeking to raise up to 5% of the GDP in additional taxes in order to make this happen. So that's an increased tax burden on South Africans, making this a highly debatable topic. Let's look at what the ANC has to say about how they plan to deal with South Africa's health crisis.
Acceptable that access to healthcare services remains dependent on a person's social and economic circumstances, with poor people still struggling to access quality, reliable care. The introduction of the National Health Insurance will correct this injustice. We will finalize the enabling legislation for the NHI and make sure that everyone has access to quality health care regardless of their ability to pay, where those who can afford to pay more to assist those who cannot pay, where the young subsidize the old, where the healthy subsidize the sick, where the rich subsidize the poor. This is the solidarity ethos that we want to promote in South Africa.
I think getting off on where what Cyril Ramaphosa was talking about is that a wealthier population is a healthier population almost. And I think one of the first things when we're talking about the health crisis in South Africa is that we've got to address the chronic unemployment situation so that more people are able to afford better health care. Let's look at a few stats here, and let's just show why there's a disparity in our country at the moment. So roughly 50% of South Africa's doctors are servicing the 16% of patients who can afford to pay the costs of medical care from their own pockets or because they belong to private medical schemes. When it comes to specialist healthcare, the picture is even more dire. 80% of medical specialists in South Africa are in the private healthcare sector and only 20% in the public healthcare sector, servicing 84% of the population. Guys, it's a massive disparity, just as it is on the economic side of things. It looks like it's on the same side as health. Apiwe, let's start with you. What do you have to say?
Okay. I think the ruling party, when it comes to health, just like with education, they've failed to do enough in the space that they have been given. They have not been aggressive enough to either change legislation or introduce measures that are going to ensure that health care, it is not a matter of whether you can pay for it or not. It's not subject to private companies whose main objective is to make money. It can be that I need to have medical aid for me to be able to access the best. They failed. NHI, from the past Zuma regime, was said to be the best thing that's going to happen to the poorest of the poor, the middle class, and all those who can't afford. But they spent those 9 years. They wasted those 9 years without ensuring that NHI sees the light of day. Look, I'm very much skeptical. Maybe if we with their commitment with implementation of the NHI, they spent this whole time. This was one of the most stable ministries. Mm. Under the Zuma administration, in that you had one minister who is a qualified professional, so he understood health, but also he had been an MEC of health in Limpopo. Mm. So you didn't take a stranger who first needed to know the field, to know how things operate, first politically, but also in a professional setup. Those 9 years passed and nothing tangible when it comes to, you know, on the ground, what NHI, he went around, there were pilot sites and whatnot, but it seems as if he has not moved.
Can I ask you a question, Apiwe? Do you in principle agree that South Africa needs universal health care?
Yeah, of course.
Sim?
100%.
Yeah, I'm on board as long as it's done properly.
Right. So you do know that that's not a question that's solved in South African society. There's major pockets of South African society, which is mostly the chattering class and upper middle class, that disprove that disagree with that, rather, that there should not be NHI.
But are we asking them for permission?
Is that how No. I'm not saying it's permission. I'm saying we live in a robust society.
Yeah, no,
right?
Of course.
So that's number one. Number two is the DA. Okay. NHI solves one problem, and that is you want to give equal quality health care. The only way you can do it is if everyone pays towards one fund and that resources get distributed equally, right?
Mm.
So if you take away, and this is my discussion earlier with Apiwe, is that I'm preferring, and I could be wrong, you guys can tear me down, right? I'm preferring to look at these problems like the constrained public health sector, right? Which is just, it's too constrained. There's just too many people, right? The resources issue, the incapacity, the failures. I want to look at it away from individuals. because I feel like, especially in a department like health and the problems facing health, and you said about unemployment, blah blah blah. There's so many factors. You know you're dealing with you know, a country that's suffering with obesity. You're suffering with, you know, rare disease. There's so many issues. There's the socioeconomic impact on the healthcare. There's the foreigner issue. That's all sort of affecting the sector. So my point is, let's not talk about Aaron Motsoaledi. Let's talk about the real issue, the real problems, and how it can be helped. Because I feel like even if you replace, like Apiwe said, Aaron Motsoaledi was a doctor, was served in Limpopo. Who in this country, even if you take the most celebrated professor of medicine and you put them in this position, there's a failure of a system. That's where I'm from. It's not about people anymore. It's too late to be talking about this one did that wrong, that one did. People have died as a result of the consequences of a bad public health sector. And so my point is now, let's talk about, what's wrong and what can be done right.
But you see, one of the biggest issues that I have with not talking about personalities when it comes to health, it's because health, it's tangible things. You want to ensure that you deal with congestion, right? So you strengthen your primary health care, right? How do you
But how does a minister of health do that?
Yeah, how do you do that? Then, as a politician, you understand that, okay, the law allows me to do this, this, and that. So if you feel as a minister of health that as a result of having people moving from this province to that province because hospital has the best healthcare. Like, for instance, Hoedeskeer in Cape Town, right? If you feel that it's being overcrowded by people from neighboring provinces, you say, look, as a minister, we feel that we are unable to efficiently provide healthcare because of overcrowding. And because of overcrowding, the cause of overcrowding is this. Problems are not detected early because the clinics are not properly staffed. There's no proper equipment and so on and so on. So this is a problem I'm picking up as a minister. You tabled to the president. Do something about it.
What do you do?
I think I'm going to let me interrupt here because I'm just answering Juanita's question, and I think it says a lot about what you were saying, Juanita, about NHI and the other seismic issues we have in our population. I think for me, when you asked me, do I support NHI, and I said it depends if it's done properly. Yeah. I think we need to move away from NHI immediately and start talking about our issues that we face in terms of infrastructure.
But you can't do that because there's no money to do that.
Yeah, exactly. So what I'm saying is that we need to fix everything first and then afterwards get in, if you understand what I'm saying.
But you can't fix it. And you see, that's the problem. The problem is...
So if there's no money to do it, where's all the money? What's been happening to all the money so far we've been paying taxes for?
Okay, there's a stat that the Minister of Health says that some people try to disprove, but I'll say it, and it's up to the listeners to, you know, whether they want to believe it or not, that in most developed nations, 9% of their GDP gets spent on healthcare for a healthy population. That's a good ratio. Mm-hmm. If you're spending 9% of your GDP, your population ought to be healthy, right? South Africa, we spend 8.7% of our GDP on healthcare. That's a good number for an emerging economy, right? And for a developing nation. Very good. In terms of the figure, it's amazing. But when you break that down, only 8.2% of our GDP, 4.2% of our GDP is spent on 84% of our population. Whereas 4.5% is spent on 16% of us in this room, or the, you know, people who work and have medical aids, etc. Right?
Sure.
So can you understand the disparity? Now, people say that 8.5% figure is it's our own money. But the reality is there is state money there in the sense that, A, we get tax rebates because of medical aid, mm-hmm. so that means the state pays.
Mm.
B, there's a huge public service which the state pays for medical aid.
Yeah.
So public money is being used for the public. So it is completely disproportionate that, so for example, you have, I'm at least use 2 5-rands. You have 5 rand to service a room full of 16 people and you have 5 rand to service a room full of 84 people. It makes no sense.
Yeah.
So that is the real problem that's underlying it. But I don't think this administration or this, and again, I'm not even talking about personalities because I don't care for personalities. I care for the fact that A, we have a deep-rooted problem. B, our laws is not designed in a way that will allow for clinics to be enabled. Because why? The way the system works, the Minister of Finance gives money to the minister to the Premier. The Premier himself decides where the money gets. The Minister of Health, sitting in his offices in Pretoria, can't decide that, okay, in Eastern Cape, we have a real big problem with healthcare this financial year. Can we assign more money to? For the first time in democracy, this financial year, Gauteng allocated more to health than it did to education. So you then have that. So it's a structural problem. You have MEC premiers deciding for themselves whether how much of money gets to health. So now you want to have a national solution to a healthcare problem where the solution now lies in 9 different people's hands, right? That's the first thing. The second thing is, the people, you spoke about doctors, being appointed and efficiencies. We have incompetent people in the public healthcare system because the function of hiring does not lie with the minister. Ministers can scream for as loud as they want to. At the end of the day, HODs are appointed by premiers, and HODs can appoint whichever doctors they want to appoint or don't want to appoint anyone. You understand?
Mm.
So these are flaws in the law. The second thing is also about procurement. And so my point here is, these are all the problems. Under the Zuma administration, there's been talk about, okay, we're getting NHI, but it was more of a publicity stunt, and I agree with you on that one, because there was not wider buy-in. The greater part of society that's going to be funding NHI does not want to fund NHI. So you need, and that's why Ramaphosa is on this thing about the poor, the rich must fund the poor, and the healthy must fund, the old, and that kind of thing. You need to have that popular buy-in, because people sitting with executive discovery plans are not wanting to go and get their health care at Baragwanath Hospital. That's just the way life works, right? So my point, I'm blabbing a lot on this, but I'm very interested in this NHI issue. Is my point is, you can't fix the healthcare system unless you're going to find a way to fund your solutions. The DA's manifesto, the EFS manifesto, is not looking at how you're going to fund the solutions. Unless you say, okay, for the next 5 years, we're not going to do anything more in education. We're focusing all of that budget to health. I'm just using an example. But that's, so the failures in the system has allowed for these things to manifest. And Isidemeni is the case in point, that the law allowed for Isidemeni to happen. And I can even say that when I am saying it publicly. Whether Kedani Matlango was there or not there, at the end of the day, the law only allows people to intervene when it's too late. That's why people die in our healthcare system.
So we don't have an affordability issue. We have a allocation of resources issue.
No, we do have an affordability issue, but
including an allocation.
Allocation affects that because now you're not having someone distributing resources competently. You understand?
Kanita, in terms of appointment of personnel, I agree to a certain extent in that just because we have a minister now who, the way he speaks, seems competent and could, if they had the power to appoint DGs at provincial level, be a good minister, there could be someone else who's going to take over from them. What I'm saying is, secondly, he or the current minister, for me, is not campaigning enough publicly or within the party or in parliament to bring about a solution
to this legal loopholes.
Exactly.
Okay.
He's always crying about
it. But he's saying he doesn't have the political, he never had the political, and this is with the doctor, what is his name, in Northwest. Remember we did that story. What was it? Doctor, the HOD in health in Northwest, doctor, what was his name?
Okay, yeah.
Anyways, remember he raised the same issue. If you don't have a political head that was saying, okay, no shame, we see the loopholes in this. It served the then administration to say, okay, premiers, do whatever you want to do.
So basically we're saying for the past administration, Mzwaledi has been frustrated under a system that is not working.
A and B, he can, and that's why my point is, everyone says Motsoaledi only comes in when the crisis happens. The law only allows for him to come in when there's a crisis. So when people say, yeah, he should have preempted the Isidimeni, there's no part of the law that allows him. So even if you have a DA government tomorrow, you understand what I'm saying? It's the same system. It's the same thing where so much of power is located so bottom of, so low down in the ladder. So that allocation of, okay, if you want to say, so my point about why that is important is Motsoaledi has now failed in HR. Can we agree with that, me and you?
Yeah, of course.
Right?
I mean,
he's failed.
I'm not saying he's failed, but I'm not happy with this output.
Okay, and I get you that. My addition to that argument is the system was designed to always make whoever was the minister fail. You understand? I don't know if you maybe think I'm giving him too much benefit of the doubt.
I'm saying he's done very little as an ANC leader.
Okay, leave him aside.
To fix. Because my understanding is that as a minister, you get a mandate, right?
Right.
If you are unable to implement that mandate because of the laws that are in place.
And restrictions.
You campaign for them to be changed to suit.
And he didn't do that.
He failed at doing it.
He failed at changing the law, but he did campaign. Right? Okay. Now, my point is, you now have a situation where healthcare is receiving so much of our budget, right? It's constrained. The stats are showing that healthcare is not going to improve. Public healthcare is not going to improve. So now we have, as we all agreed, you need some sort of NHI, right?
Yeah, right.
You hear me? So my point is, what is the problem now with the Minister of Health saying, listen, I've tried. For 9 years, I've tried. I can't do this anymore. President, take this entire NHI, put it in your office, and you make a plan. Don't you think that's a good thing?
He should have done it first 5 years.
Okay, he had another boss.
No. Well, he was going to tell him, well, this is the potential budget of this thing that you were going to, and he must be running it. And I'm sure his boss then is just like, well, now that you are saying, and then we were going to have an NHI. Oh, that's all I'm saying.
No, we wouldn't have had
NHI. Let me just pause in here. Let's just say we need to move on very quickly.
Well, we're not daddy as well.
No, we're going to move on to the EFF and the DA. We're not going to have time to play their snippets, unfortunately, but let's just talk a little bit about what they promise in terms of health. So I think Malema, in his manifesto launch, he was talking quite a lot about the party strive to build one clinic per ward within 1 kilometer radius of each person's home, which is a bit crazy if you ask me. It's a bit far-fetched. And if I quote him directly, he says, we need more doctors. One ward, one doctor. That doctor must conduct routine checks. So the EFF has this massive plan, or, well, not plan, I think it's a bit...
It's a wish list.
It's a bit of a wish list to say that you're going to have one house, a clinic in the 1 kilometer vicinity of every single community. And then the DA, on the other hand, they say they stand for universal access to health, which is a lot like what we're talking about. And they say the key to this over the next 5 years is not big policy developments, but making the current regional management model work. And they say that they've been able to achieve this in the Western Cape. So two very different policies here. The DA is saying, let's fix what we have in a regional area and allocate the funds accordingly. The EFF saying we just need to build more things and allocate more resources. What do you guys think?
Look, the The only disadvantage with the EFF when it comes to our discussions is that they are the only one who have not been in government, so we can't judge them whether or not it would work, or they will find a way to find money. So it's very difficult to debate their policy and compare it to these two parties who are currently ruling parties. But I've lived in the Western Cape for at least 4 years.
Yes.
And I will tell you that their healthcare system is one of the better working ones in the country. There are people who would say going to Hotskir is like you have been in a private hospital, but that hospital has been there, it predates the deal. But it's not just you're not just talking about that particular hospital. You have to look across the province. Do they have proper, do people of the Western Cape have proper access to basic healthcare, and is it working for them? All I know is that there are very few people who are transported from the Western Cape to another province for procedures that should be done in that province.
But then that's because the Western Cape has always been largely urban. They were way developed long before other provinces. Because, for example, in my hometown, if you are really, really sick and you need to see a specialist, you are more likely to be sent to KZN Albert Luthuli.
Yeah.
You know, that's the next best thing. That's another province. Whereas I think if you're sick here in Gauteng, you're not going to be sent to Rotaskir. You're going to go to
a
hospital that is capable here in Gauteng. But you know, apart from all those logistics and this and that, I do think something drastic and radical needs to happen to the health system. We, of course, there are people who are more privileged and fortunate than others who can afford, you know, better. But we can't just fold our arms and say, well, you go there and queue for 4 days and get one pill, a Panado, you know. So,
but that was my point as well. You have to take away the inhumanize healthcare.
Yeah, it's you know, when you see sick people, this thing makes me so emotional, because I've lost two family members who had cancer, both in KZN, who both were diagnosed on the fourth stage. You know, even getting a diagnosis is a problem in the public healthcare system. I don't know why, because that should be the simplest things ever. I mean, if you have breast cancer, there is a lump, you take it, you check the tissue, is it cancerous, is it not cancerous? It's that simple. But they are failing to even give you a diagnosis, and you die. You don't have to die. We're losing a lot of people. So I'm saying, We subsidize, we do whatever needs to be done for people not to die.
So this thing of a doctor patrolling everyone would at least help you with the diagnosis, isn't it? This thing of a doctor...
The EFF's wish list of a doctor in every
ward. Everyone would at least assist you with a diagnosis.
No, man, EFF is crazy.
but if you have a clinic... if you have a clinic, why can't you have a doctor stationed there?
Guys, can I give you an example?
In
my village, right, in Whittlesea, I was born in 1988 in a clinic. There was a sister there at night, a midwife, and I was brought in safe. If you were to go to that clinic right now, you're not even going to find one registered nurse. The registered nurse is the one that has white epaulets, 3 years diploma. You are going to find the ENA, those ones that wear navy and are most likely to be able to give you maybe fix your bed or give you a glass of water. It's the sister has to sit down and serve probably 500 people. So I'm saying there is a problem with our government, with our democratic government, and something drastic needs to happen, because it's not working.
I don't think that's in denial. I don't think that anybody is saying that there's not a problem, or that there needs to be a drastic overhaul even of our healthcare system. But where do we start with this is the question, and how do we do it? And it doesn't seem like any of the political parties have a proper idea and a proper plan on how to make it happen. According to
at the risk of sounding populist, is probably because, you know, public representatives and politicians don't use public health care.
Yeah.
Mm. But come, look, yes, to a certain extent, it's because of that. But a large number of our public reps are not people who were born with medical aids, mm. with what they've been using these before they became MPs, before they became MPLs, before they became councillors. So they know. That's the.
So that's a worse tragedy if you know what.
Yeah, they know. You know it's how like bad a lot of them know. A lot of them go to rallies and sing that my mother was a kitchen girl, my father was a garden boy.
And it's not just a song, it's the reality.
It's really. Yeah. Therefore, they know. Yeah. So if now, previously, when I go to a clinic, I can't be attended to at 7 p.m. And because of a bad road, I can't go to a hospital at night, then I'm sick. Yeah. So if that clinic was properly functioning, I mean, I could have been, you know,
guys,
the problem could have been dealt with. But anyway.
The last time I went to a clinic, I remember I had a boil in my armpit and I was still at DUT, polyclinic next to Eddington. I had no medical aid then. I was there from 7:30 in the morning and there were probably about 400 people ahead of me who got there by 3 a.m. I was there until 4:30, and I was told that we are giving you this number. I think it was 490 something. You come back tomorrow, and you're not. We're gonna start with, you know, the leftovers of today. And I was asking what the problem is, because we've been here the whole day, and they said the MEC doesn't want to hire. There is no money.
But then you know what?
There is no money. There is nothing we can do. And it was just two ladies who were working the shift at the clinic the whole day. So, I mean,
So doctors and nurses are overworked.
They are exhausted, they are overworked.
But can I also
tired, and they don't have even the resources sometimes.
Yeah. But also the other issue is that, you know, the thing about a fish rots from the head. Because medical practitioners that work in the public health care system know how constrained it is and how there are people who actively do not do their work to their best or act with the same professionalism that you would in the public, in the private sector, because they can get away with it because of the big, you know, the issues. And I think that's also another problem. But you can't deal with that. You can't deal with nurses swearing, you know, people or, you know, or like, you know, people stealing from hospitals and all of these scandals that we've seen in the past, because you have such a massive problem. So you don't know where to start. But that's the thing about the healthcare system. The main issue is the constraint. You're fitting too many people in too small of a system, and it's heartbreaking because it's you're interfacing with human beings and on the receiving end. I don't think there's any one of us in this room who would not have been you know, subject, like you said, to public healthcare, or have had family members who were at the care. And you see the brutality of public healthcare, and your heart breaks. And that's why, maybe to my own bias, was like, we need to stop talking about people. Let's talk about how to fix this thing. I could be wrong.
I can agree with it. I think everyone needs to sit down, and well, people in charge need to sit down and think about a proper plan on how to fix this. But unfortunately, guys, This is all that we have time for this week. Thank you so much for joining us, guys. Thanks for joining me in studio. I think we're going to have more great coverage for you next week. We haven't decided on a topic for elections yet. If you guys have any suggestions, just drop us a message on Twitter as well. If you have any suggestions on what you'd like us to talk about. In the meantime, please follow us on Twitter. We'll all hashtag SD Politics Weekly. And you can follow our podcast there. We'll be sharing the link to this podcast. Thanks, guys, so much for joining us. And we'll catch you again next week.